Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Thank you both. Andrew Yeoh joins us now, senior fellow and Korea chair at the Brookings Institution and professor of politics at Catholic University. As we serious up, yesterday we talked about China and the balloon and the U.S. Today we're talking about North Korea and where things stand with Kim Jong-un. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. It's good to be on the program with you.
Thanks for taking the time. You know, the Kim Jong-un and North Korea, it's one of these things that's not on the front page every day, but he doesn't go away, correct? And this whole situation does not go away.
That's right. This has been going on, and he's like the gift that keeps giving for North Korea analysts like myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me where we stand now. I know on, what, New Year's Day they had an ICBM launch?
Yeah, they had a nuclear test on New Year's Eve, on New Year's Day. They had 90 tests, missile tests, ICBM tests, yeah. Short-range tests.
Let me just jump in, Andrew, if I may. If I may, when you say
sure.
Nuclear tests, you're talking about missiles, not explosions, right?
Yeah, missile tests. So these are missile tests. There is, everyone is saying that they're getting ready to do a seventh nuclear test. It hasn't happened yet. But yes, just a correction that these are ballistic missiles that they've been testing. They're trying to perfect their range and capabilities so that they could hit a target in the U.S. They already have the range, I think, to hit cities in the United States, but they don't have the capabilities quite yet to have a missile go up and then back down and re-enter into the atmosphere without burning up. So that's why they're consistently doing these missile tests.
So you got to have the warhead, right? And that has to work. And then you have to have the delivery system, which is the missile, correct?
That's correct. And so you have to make the warhead. You have to insert the nuclear, the fissile material into the warhead, and it has to be launched. And it goes up into the atmosphere. But right now with a long-range missile, this is the intercontinental ballistic missiles, the ICBMs, mm-hmm. They don't have, at least not yet, the assumption is they don't have the capabilities to strike, so let's say the east coast of the United States. But I think in terms of the short range, they can definitely do that. And that's why there's a lot of discussions, even South Korea, about whether we're protected, we meaning the South Koreans, are protected well enough against North Korean missiles. And they've even talked about growing their own homegrown nuclear weapons. So there's been some discussion in South Korea as well, too.
You know, so much talk has been made, whatever you say. We've been talking so much, let me put it that way, Andrew, about Iran and fissile material, et cetera. But I presume North Korea has everything they need to construct nuclear weapons, and they get this from China? Or explain that to me, please.
Sure. Well, the technology transfer that they've acquired, many actually think it was from Iran. There was a period where Pakistan, there was a scientist named A.Q. Khan who had a network, and so it's actually from the Pakistanis and the Iranians that maybe they had acquired the nuclear technology. But in terms of missiles and rockets, you know, they may have also borrowed from Chinese technology there. But this is a program that's been in place since the early 1990s. And that's why we say when we keep going on, it's been more than three decades where we've tried to stop North Korea from acquiring nuclear weapons. But as time goes on, you know, they've gradually continued to build. It's been a two-step forward, one-step back process. We've gotten them to put in place a freeze, or we've had negotiations in the past. But this is why U.S. negotiators, they feel that they, you know, they don't want to draw a line. So there's talk about, well, why don't we just negotiate with the North Koreans? Why don't we go for a freeze? But they feel that if you work on an arms control agreement where you get North Korea to stop everything, that they're just going to try to finagle whatever they can from the U.S. and the international community and then restart their program at some other point. But now I think North Korea's goal is that they just want the international community to accept them as a nuclear state. So I think it's much harder also for the United States, the Biden administration, to really get North Koreans to come back to the negotiating table.
At this point, does the world have an option other than to accept North Korea as a nuclear state?
So the U.S. government, it's one of these things where they know that the North Koreans really won't give up nuclear weapons, but you can't declare that, okay, we accept North Korea as having nuclear weapons. They're now a nuclear status state. Because the U.S. is very much committed to nonproliferation, meaning we don't want other states other than the existing recognized nuclear states and those that have the recognized nuclear states, so, you know, U.S., China, Russia, U.K., France, other than those. And there's, of course, other states that have since acquired nuclear weapons that aren't a part of this nonproliferation treaty. But there's a commitment to not have the spread of nuclear weapons. And if to say that North Koreans can get nuclear weapons would be making another exception, and it would signal to other regimes, say, for instance, Iran, Saudi Arabia, even within East Asia, South Korea, that it's okay to get nuclear weapons. So that's why they can't say in public, we accept North Korea as a nuclear state. But that being said, there's some arguments that, well, the best that we can do is to at least de-escalate the tensions and the threat. And so for the time being, why don't we think about that arms control agreement? Why don't we get them to do a nuclear freeze and put a cap? And maybe down the road, 5 years, 10 years, we can persuade the North Koreans that it's not in their interest to have nuclear weapons. We can give them more economic goodies. We can give them fuel and energy in return for giving up their nuclear weapons. But that's where you have this debate. Those who have been working on North Korea issues for a long time say, you fooled me once, fine, don't fool me twice. And so, again, they're very resistant to having that type of approach. They think that having an arms control or a nuclear freeze agreement in place is tantamount to basically accepting North Korea as a nuclear state.
So to recap, Andrew, right now they do have a nuclear weapon. They could deliver it short range, and the only issue now is them perfecting the ICBM technology so they would have a long-range nuclear weapon. Is that accurate, what I just said?
That's correct. So it's the question of whether they're a threat to the U.S. Mainland. Now, they're already a threat to the U.S. because we have American troops in Japan and South Korea, and
Hawaii,
so they're vulnerable,
right,
to a nuclear attack. So one thing that the U.S. has guaranteed to its allies is a concept known as extended deterrence. So deterrence works means that we have weapons, so you don't want to launch them at us because we're going to completely destroy your country. And the U.S. has said that point blank in their 2022 national security strategy. There's also a national defense strategy where they say point blank, any use of North Korean nuclear weapons is the end of the regime. And so the U.S. wants to make it credible that any nuclear threats from North Korea will result in severe punishment. So for now, we have what we call U.S. nuclear strategic assets. We don't have nuclear weapons on the Korean peninsula, but we have bombers, we have submarines that can launch nuclear weapons. And so we tell North Koreans, we won't tell you where the locations are, but we have these assets. And so don't try to launch nuclear weapons because we're going to get you back. So that's where we're at right now in terms of protecting U.S. forces. But certainly if they can strike, the East, Washington, D.C., New York, and that would be escalating the levels of threat once again.
If they desired to, could they launch a nuclear weapon into Hawaii, Pearl Harbor?
Yes, and so I don't know if you remember, but in 2017 or 2018, but there was a false alarm,
right,
where the Pacific Command, so that's where our command theater headquarters is located, where they said that there was a missile coming, and everyone, hit the deck, or they went indoors, and I heard it was a scary moment. So yes, they do have that capability.
And having been to Hawaii, it really struck me as real, and it shocked me. It honestly did. That's why I remember. We're gonna take a break. We come back, I want to talk about tensions ratcheting up with China. What role does China play? What do they gain with? Because China's playing a long game, right? And what do they gain with the by muddling up between North Korea and us? And also the threat besides nuclear weapons, conventional weapons, what kind of threat do they pose? We're talking to I wish we wouldn't be, Andrew, and it's nothing personal. Andrew Yeo, senior fellow and Korea chair at the Brookings Institution and professor of politics at Catholic University, about Kim Jong-un, but they have been some episodes of flights that are getting close to each other and jet fighters and so forth and buzzing each other. And all it takes is one accident, and who knows what could happen. Kim Jong-un has not gone away, and we'll continue our discussion when we come back. 504-260-1870. If you got any questions or comments, Tommy Tucker, WWL. 9:26, talking to Andrew Yeo, senior fellow, Korea chair at the Brookings Institution and professor of politics at Catholic University, about Kim Jong-un. It'd be nice, just because he's not on the front page, if he would quietly go away, but he has not. And Andrew, how'd you say that? He's the gift that keeps on giving, huh?
Yeah, and there have been rumors that he died or his health was, that he was sick. But when those rumors come, 3 weeks later, he reappears again. So,
hasn't he lost
weight? He doesn't go away.
And hasn't he lost weight or something or gotten more healthy?
He has. He's slimmed down. Many suspect it could be the COVID diet. I mean, there was reports that he had fevers. No one really knows for sure if they were COVID or not. And North Koreans, when they were reporting an outbreak last May, they didn't refer to it as COVID. They just said there were people with fevers, because they actually didn't have enough testing kits to accurately test people who are getting sick. But that was the assumption. They had he'd gotten COVID, and then he had lost weight. He had shed some weight after that.
Where does China stand with this? They don't want North Korea and us to get along, I presume. Do they want a nuclear North Korea or not?
So they would prefer North Korea not to have nuclear weapons, to have them, but their preference is really stability within the Korean Peninsula, which means the status quo. So they don't want a unified Korea, because it would most likely mean a Korea under mostly South Korean influence, which is a U.S. alliance. You have which they have an alliance with the U.S., so it would mean having an allied Korea right up against China's border. So they want the peninsula to stay divided. So as long as the regime doesn't collapse or it's not too unstable, then that is their goal. Now, if nuclear weapons creates instability, that's the reason why they wouldn't want to have this escalation of tensions. But this is why they've sometimes played a constructive role and other times they haven't. So in 2017, 2018, this is a period of fire and fury when North Korea conducted 3 nuclear tests, dozens of missile tests, and Trump, threatened to press the button and say that, my nukes are bigger than your nukes. So during that period, China actually got a little bit more serious, because they saw that this could lead to some sort of conflict. If there's an invasion or if North Korea collapses, that it would put the advantage to the U.S. and South Korea. And so they decided to apply sanctions on North Korea. But that's the problem. The U.S. always complains that China's willing to put up sanctions to signal to North Korea its displeasure, but not turn the screws so tight that it would lead to a complete collapse of the regime. So that's where China stands.
And historically, it was the United States getting so close to China that led them into the Korean War, correct?
That's correct. Well, during the Korean War, MacArthur, he had run up the North Koreans all the way up to the Chinese, the Yalu River, the Chinese-North Korean border. And that's when the Chinese, they were both communist countries. And, Mao Zedong felt that he can't just sit here at this point, because they could try to enter China as well. And then he decided to support full force the North Koreans. But right now, I think China's not playing a constructive role, just because of the tensions in U.S.-China competition. As Putin, Kim Jong-un, Xi Jinping, they have their dictators, moral support group there. So in some ways, they're all supporting one another. I think China has the most to lose, though, because international reputation still matters to China. I think Russia and North Korea at this point, they're international reputation doesn't matter much. And so that's why there's still some hope that maybe you can get China to be play a more constructive role, perhaps persuade the North Koreans to dial it back a bit, to not conduct a seventh nuclear test. But in 2022, we didn't see any of that from China.
So China doesn't want North Korea too strong. They don't want them too weak either, right?
Right. They want the status quo and they want stability on the Korean Peninsula. That's their highest aim. And, you know, of course, as I mentioned, they don't want North Korea to have nuclear weapons. But if that's one way of keeping the regime intact, then they can live with it. And they seem to be more okay with it in recent years than they were in the past.
We talk about nuclear weapons, and rightfully so. What about conventional weapons, and how much of a threat does North Korea pose to South Korea and the United States troops stationed there?
Yeah, so they do have a formidable military threat as well, too. You know, 30% of their economy is devoted to the military. So this is a country that can't feed its people, but it's willing to sustain an army and spend money on missile and nuclear technology, also increasing cyber capabilities. They've pulled off, they've gotten into crypto, and they've stolen money from different countries' banks. The most famous one was the Lazarus heist, where they stole money from the Central Bank of Bangladesh. There are concerns. All the missiles that they have are we talked about missile technology and capabilities, but North Korean missiles are all pointed towards South Korea. The Korean Peninsula, as I mentioned, it's not just South Koreans that are at threat, but Americans as well, too. We have 28,500 troops and some families and their dependents and, several hundred thousand Americans that live there. So it is a formal threat. They have their army is 1.1 million, from 1.1 to 1.2 million. Of course, the quality of their weapons, it's all kind of outdated, even Soviet-era weapons that they're using. But they have a lot of manpower, and they do a lot of training. They live under their society is really a militarized society, where from really a very young age they're taught that they have this threat. The United States is out there lurking, and so they're always in this perpetual state of readiness. It's compulsory military service, so all men in North Korea have to serve in the military, and then after several years of service, all of them are in the reserves until age 40.
And it's pragmatic for Kim Jong-un to do that, because if you can for a second talk about the life of the average North Korean, what life is like for them. But he who controls the military controls the country. So if you conscript people into the military, then I guess you have their loyalty. And as a result, you pretty well ensure that you're going to be in power.
Right. And when you are in the military, you are fed a little bit better. You know, there's a social strata. There's stratification where you're allocated, the amount of food and the amount of rewards that you're allocated from the state depend on your rank and your position. So the military is still respectable, seen as a respectable position in the eyes of the regime. And, Kim Jong-un, the regime, the structure is set up in a way where it's coup-proof. So he actually is head of the party, head of the state, and head of the military. So, yes, he commands all three of those, and it's a way, again, to ensure his survivability.
Any final thoughts, Andrew? I've enjoyed talking to you.
No, other than they're not on the front page of the news right now, but as I mentioned, there's assumptions that they may launch conduct a seventh nuclear test this year. And there's always questions about the transition, the successor. We saw last year his daughter appear in public for the first time. So I do think that we'll see North Korea and Kim Jong-un in the news in 2023 as well.
So when you say coup-proof, that's taking into account his family, right?
Yes, his regime. And so this is, in a way, setting up the future of North Korea. His sister has been considered Kim Yo-jong, his younger sister, has been seen as a potential future leader, and perhaps his daughter. He's known to have three children, but so far we've only seen his daughter in public. But yes, there's the future generation of Kims. We're at the third generation, and we may be looking towards the fourth in the upcoming years.
Best not to get on his wrong side, huh, Andrew?
Yes. Yes, but we do have to address his threat. I think that is a concern.
Yes, absolutely. No, I know that. Yeah. I'm just saying internally in the country, I don't see any way that he loses control of that.
Oh, yeah, internally. He'll just kill you if you resist. If you're not part of his inside clan or part of his family or close associates, there's a risk to everyone's lives who challenge the regime.
In the worst possible way. Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate your time. Andrew Yeo, senior fellow, Korea chair at the Brookings Institution, professor of politics at Catholic University. I hope we get to talk to you again. 9:35, we're going to talk about speckled trout and limits. When we come back, it is time for traffic. First, though, here on WWL.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.